Well, hello there, and welcome to this, the Developer's Guide to Windows 10. This is the Build 10.5.86 SDK update.
It's the new one, the second one.
Yep, so we've got it's actually a nice short half day of presentations with some interesting stuff. The idea, of course, is to get you up to speed with what's new in both Windows 10 version 15.11 and the corresponding developer tools.
Correct.
So I'm Andy Wigley, and Shen, we both work in the same group.
Yeah. Yes, we do, in developer experience.
And we're here in Redmond today to give you this half day of content. So what we're going to talk about, first of all, what is in Windows 10 version 15.11. Then we're going to pick out some of the key features. So we got Continuum for Phone as being one of the kind of standout.
What exciting text.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we're going to have a look at that. And what, obviously, all this is from the developer's point of view. So what it means for developers, which you'll be pleased to know, doesn't mean a huge amount of anything extra. It's anything you knew already about Adaptive UI and your apps ready for Continuum for Phone. So that's really cool. We've got a deep dive session on that coming up straight after half an hour session following this one, where we go in a bit deeper, but this is going to be a summary one. We're going to have a quick look at Microsoft Passport and Windows Hello, which is our mission to get rid of the password.
Yes, I really like that feature, actually.
Yeah, so nice biometrics for logging in, but also there's a developer story for that. We will, of course, look at the UWP, the 10.5.86 SDK. So this is the update, the new SDK.
That's where all the
SDK.
Goodies are now.
That's right, with new APIs in it.
Yeah.
Quick brief look at what's in Visual Studio 2015 Update 1, which is the DevTools update.
Yeah.
And then just a roundup with a reminder of where you get all this stuff. So, what is in Windows 10 version 15.11?
Yes, very catchy name.
Yeah, the 15.11, in case you haven't figured out, is November 2015. That's where the version comes from, because it's been rolling out now for a few weeks.
Yes, it has.
But let's look at where we've come from. So we started with our first general availability of Windows 10. The first release was 29th of July 2015, was when we first released Windows 10. I know, it seems like a long time. Yeah, and obviously that version was mainly about releasing Windows 10 for laptops, for convertibles like the Surface, and also for IoT. So we had kind of the mid-size and the desktop stuff and the really tiny stuff.
Yeah.
So the Raspberry Pi 2 and the Minnow board, loads of cool stuff happening in that space. We don't really cover that, but there's IoT is really moving on.
Yeah, definitely. So what's in the new stuff?
And before we're getting good momentum with Windows 10. It's exciting place to be. So we've seen over a billion Windows Store visits from Windows 10 install
base.
That's
a big number.
Yeah, it's on over. In fact, this is already out of date. But a few weeks ago, we were on over 110 million.
My mother installed it this morning, so there's already
110 million and one at least.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we're seeing really good engagement for the Windows Store, so double compared to Windows 8.1. But more importantly, from a developer point of view, we're seeing kind of on average four times the dev revenue per Windows 10 device. So it's ecosystem
that's building.
Got,
yeah,
that's right.
it's pretty good.
Yeah. So that was the first release, and you'll notice actually that was version 10.0, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
But from a developer point of view, you will be familiar from Visual Studio, if you've been building stuff, that this was build 10.240.
Yes.
That was the kind of build level that was for the first release.
And that's because the Universal Frameworks move at a different pace sometimes to the Windows, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So what have we got now? So holiday now, the current season. We've got the next version, which is this version 15.11, which is about bringing some of these other devices. So we've always said, that Windows 10 is this single developer platform across all of our devices. And each kind of new sort of landmark release, we're bringing in some new ones. So this one is about primarily Windows 10 Mobile. So that's bringing it to phones and small tablets. We've also got the Windows 10, the new home screen, the new experience for Xbox One.
I love that screen. It's amazing.
I mean, we have to say at this point that the actual developer experience for building apps for Xbox One, that's going to come along next year. But this is kind of an important landmark
it's
on
a,
that.
It's a milestone.
It certainly is. Yeah. So that's kind of the kind of thing there. And also, of course, we've released some rather attractive hardware.
Look, my favourites there.
Yeah, including the Surface Book, which Shen is modelling on my left here. Yes, there we go. and also really cool hardware from our partners. You know, curved screen stuff and really exciting convertibles from our partners. And really, there's a lot of the most exciting hardware coming out at the moment. And of course, we're releasing some pretty nice stuff ourselves, the Lumia 950 devices and the Surface Pro 4, you know, convertibles. So a lot of excitement, a lot of really, really nice hardware for you to spend your money on this this holiday season. And we're also just looking ahead a little bit more. So early next year as well, we're going to be saying a bit more about the HoloLens and also about the Surface Hub, the big collaboration thing. So we've got some, you know, in 2016, we're going to be putting a bit more focus onto those ones as well. So the family is, you know, expanding
building,
all the time. And we're bringing this this single developer story, this single developer platform to more and more devices. So the key features in this current one that's rolling out at the moment, the version 15.11, obviously bringing Windows 10 to phone devices. And the key feature there, if you like, the standout feature, I mean, well, actually, maybe the key feature is just that it's UWP.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's going to be the big win.
I know we were sort of talking about building for phone, even at the 10.2.40, our last developer's guide, but actually there weren't any devices, apart from for insiders. Windows insiders have been able to install onto sort of existing Lumia devices for a while, but this is now sort of official. We've got a public release of this version 15.11. It's going out to the new devices, Lumia 950, 950 XL, and the 550, which went on distribution just this week. We also got Microsoft Passport and Windows Hello. So this is about bringing in more secure authentication without passwords. We're going to look a little bit more about that in a moment.
I think that's one of my favorites. It's like a James Bond tech. It's just so cool. It just works.
That's right. And we're also a big focus on this version is about expanding out features that enterprises need. We've got the Windows Store for Business. We've got Microsoft Passport for Work, which is the kind of enterprise version of that Microsoft Passport and Windows Hello. And Enterprise Client State Roaming. I'll talk about these in a little moment. And of course, key features with this is our Build 10 586 SDK.
Yes.
So that's the key thing. Let's look first of all at Continuum. So for the phones, because this is a pretty exciting feature.
So Continuum is sort of like the continuation of experience across Windows devices, right?
Yeah, that's right, yes. The key thing here is Continuum is nothing new. So Continuum is we've had from the beginning for the Surface Pro devices, where you can convert between a laptop mode and a tablet mode. So you can remove the keyboard from those devices, and Windows 10 will pop up a little dialogue and say, you know, do you want to switch to tablet mode? Yeah. And you get a more touch-centric experience. And really, Continuum is about sort of making sure that the good experience spans across different devices and continues. The devices can kind of morph into this different user mode. But the key thing here with this new release is bringing Continuum for phone as well, where you can actually now with new hardware, so you need the new chipset, so we can't do this with our older phones.
But the 950s that have been released are all good to go with this, right?
Yeah, so they've got this capability of actually being able to drive a second screen.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is kind of how it looks. You know, you can actually, this picture showing the wired display adapter.
Yeah.
You can use Miracast as well. You can do this wirelessly to a suitably equipped screen.
Okay.
But you know, you can hook up a USB wired or wireless keyboard and mouse as well. And now all of a sudden, you've effectively got a dual monitor set up here, where your first monitor is the integral screen for the phone, and then the big monitor is your second screen.
I can see me using this, especially when I travel, like hotel rooms and stuff. This is going to make life so much easier.
Yeah. So you can obviously you can still run apps on the primary screen there, And you can run apps on the big screen. So, and obviously, once they're running on the big screen, you've got all that screen real estate that you can take advantage of to run these big experiences.
And this is still a UWP, right? That's the main thing.
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah. So it is a UWP app, so adaptive UI, and that's the key thing. So here we've got, you know, a big screen experience, but that same app, of course, can run on the small screen with a suitable UI that you have created for that.
So we've talked sort of about adaptive triggers. This is a key scenario where actually making sure that your app remains responsive with maybe using those triggers is a great way to make sure that when you plug your phone in, it's still just a great experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, so a really great experience there. How does Continuum affect the app developer? So, for the app development point of view, it's actually just standard adaptive UI. So, if you've already been building an app that you've created, one that sort of scales nicely across a narrow screen, and to be honest, you know, these days you're building a UWP app for desktop, you have to build the narrow screen because Windows are resizable.
You might snap it to the corner of the screen and all sorts. Yeah.
But from the phone, this app running on a phone equipped with Continuum, it's just the same old, same old. So, you know, you've got your primary display happens to be, you know, a 5-inch or 6-inch display, which is kind of the same as a narrow snapped view on desktop. So you've probably done all that work already. And then your secondary screen is just the, you know, the large monitor. So we've got, you know, it could be a desktop monitor, or it could be a TV. But these are just larger displays. And if you've done adaptive UI, you've already kind of got this.
So that's the key thing for developers, really. Just make sure it remains adaptive.
Yeah. So just to sort of illustrate that, let's switch
demo.
A demo, yes.
Nice.
Right, so, and actually I've chosen carefully. This is a demo that we did in the last developer's guide, which was the sample for the adaptive UI. So let's first of all, you know, run it on the desktop. And I've chosen this one carefully. And this is exactly the same version. Mm-hmm. But this is the same one. I pulled it out of the sample code.
So there's been no changes, right?
No changes. It's still built for...
Oh yeah, I remember this.
It's still built. It's you remember it because of the
just
horrendous,
the wonderful user interface there, Andy.
It is wonderful, but it's adaptive. So, you know, you've got this kind of large screen layout where you've got an editor's surface out on the right, and then you can shrink it in smaller. And it kind of shrinks to a narrow view, which is suitable for a phone. And so we use this as the sample when we were building out this thing. So it's a nice adaptive UI like that. Now, so that's great. Now then, I have got here a Lumia, which I'm going to just plug in a Lumia 950. And I'm going to change the target to ARM, because it's an ARM. I'm going to run this on the device. And that'll take a little while. We're just starting the deploy. So we'll be able to see that in just a moment.
So here we go.
Yes, it takes a little while just to push that down to the device.
But it is incredible that essentially you're going to be running the same app cross on the phone and then use Continuum to sort of demo everything. It's just... So there's not really much work for developers to do here. Really what you want to do is maybe if it's a bigger screen, maybe just light up maybe certain parts of your app to maybe look a bit better so you don't have so much blank parts
of your
app.
That's right, yeah. And here you can see, we've got our phone display. Get the resolution right. There we go. So it's running nicely on the integral phone screen. It actually works, of course, in landscape and portrait.
Yeah.
So that's fine, but then what about running it on the big screen? So for that, you have to cross your fingers for me here, because
here we go.
I'm going to disconnect from my laptop, and I'm going to plug in. I've got.
So that's the display dock, right?
This is the display dock. Yes, cool. I'm plugging in. I've got a USB-C cable. I'm plugging into the phone.
And what's in your display dock? So I see you've got a wireless keyboard, mouse. Is it?
I've got two. Yes, I've got for a keyboard and a mouse there, and the keyboard's over there. So
the display dock is plugging up to a screen here, right?
That's right. Yes. So and what I need to try and do is just switch over to choose the right one.
Okay.
Switch over to our
there's
a screen. Now the it's a bit letterboxed on here. This is the vagaries of working in a sophisticated broadcast studio such as this. You see that on the phone we've changed to this kind of display where you can actually use this as a sort of touchpad to work the main display.
Oh, wow.
But actually, I'm just going to use my mouse because, you know, we can have a mouse and keyboard. I'm sort of running out of desk space.
Yeah.
This is it. So I can go off and find the app I've just deployed to it. And there it is, the developer's guide to do sample. And we can run that on the big screen. And this is the desktop experience. There we go, with the same layout. So
it does kind of mess with your head a bit, doesn't it? Because you always think you're using a machine, but you're not. It's coming from your phone.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that's cool stuff. We're going to...
we'll have more on this later.
We've got Liz Throckles going to join me in the next session. We're going to just dig a little bit deeper into this. All right. So I need to now put this back to the other one.
I'm assuming the lovely Liz is going to show us way more cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk a bit more. Right. So there we go.
Okay.
That was Windows 10 Mobile and Continuum. Change tack. Let's talk about the next thing, Microsoft Passport. So actually, this question at the moment says, are there plans to bring Continuum to the high-spec classic Lumia such as the 1520? Now, unfortunately not, because this is a hardware-supported feature.
Yep.
So the latest chipsets that are in the latest phones have got this capability to run on a second screen, so yep. Sadly not.
So currently, it's just the 950 and the 950 XL, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Microsoft Passport and Windows Hello. This is, you're probably familiar with this kind of thing, so this is a simulation, but we actually have got a whole session on Passport and Hello coming on a bit later this morning as well. Rajan Krishna is going to join me and run us through that and the whole developer story, so we're going to look a little bit more at this. But this is equipping your PC with biometrics to log in, so it could be a fingerprint reader, could be iris detection.
Yeah, because Hello's like a collection of things, it's not just your face detection.
And this is the kind of thing you get with the face detection, where it's looking for you, and then when it recognizes you, it will then go give you a nice cheery welcome, nice little smile, and it's all very friendly, and say, hello, Andy. So that's kind of the experience.
Yeah.
And you can log into your devices just using these biometrics, so no more passwords. There is a behind it, you have to set up a PIN code. We're going to talk about how the whole thing works out later on. But in terms of the biometrics that are supportive of Windows Hello, we've got obviously fingerprint, we've got face detection, and for that you need one of these. It's not just, you can't use the old snap and go kind of webcam. No, this is actually a 3D infrared camera.
Because it does heat maps and things like that on your face, right?
Yeah, which sounds like super expensive, but actually this technology is becoming very reasonable thing at the
Fantastic.
Moment. And it's getting built into increasingly more and more machines. We've also got, just announced, we've got Kinect for Windows V2.
Oh, cool.
It can also do face recognition. That was just announced this week. So that's in beta, as you say,
and
over
people
here.
People can use their dev kits to do all this on the Kinect?
Yes, so that's coming out.
That's pretty cool.
That's right. And a number of other devices. And we've got iris detection as well, and that is built into these Lumia 950s. So you can set that up and hold it up in front of your eyes to detect and to log in like that. So that's really good. All of these features, and we're going to dig a little bit deeply with this with Rajan a little bit later on. Yeah, what is this all about? It's not just cutesy, oh, this is fun, isn't it? Because we can, I can look at my PC and it logs in, oh, that's fantastic. Which it is.
It is cool, but it's not a gimmick.
That's not what it's about. It's actually about improving security, and it's quite substantially. Yeah. And why is, you know, looking, why is face detection better than a password? Well, that one's an obvious, really.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, this will also work even if you haven't got the biometrics, so the fingerprint reco and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
This will work just with a PIN code instead of a password.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound safer, but it's all because it's about two-factor authentication, because it's not the PIN code in isolation, it's the PIN code and the device.
Yeah.
And then it using asymmetric cryptography techniques. We'll talk about this with Rajan a bit later. So no passwords, no PIN codes go across the network at all. So the idea is to get away from these things where hackers can break in and steal all the credentials from a database.
But it's also trying to make sure your login process is frictionless. It's not, you know, you're not, because you're adding the extra security doesn't mean that you have to start, you know, doing extra things around your login in process, which is nice.
That's right. So the underlying tech that makes all this work is Microsoft Passport.
Yeah.
Windows Hello is the biometrics framework mm-hmm. that sits on top of that, which allows all this nice biometric stuff for authentication. And as you say, Azure Active Directory, Microsoft Account, on-premises Active Directory, they're already integrated with this. So you start using this today. It's not just about logging onto your device. This is a developer story as well. So we've got a question up there. Can you enroll users from within your UWP app? Well, this is a kind of a client-server story here. So
yes.
You still have to have a server enrollment kind of thing. But you can do that, obviously, from within the context of your app.
Okay.
But once the one-time enrollment has gone on, then you're just passing digitally signed challenges across the network. And there's no passwords or anything going across.
Cool. So it's like a token in some sense.
Indeed it is. So yeah. it's a big improvement on security and something that we are pushing very hard to get that widely adopted. Clarification. Can you enroll new Windows Hello users within the context of your UWP application? Well, the Windows Hello registration is the hardware.
Yes.
You've got a secure chip.
And that's where the two-factor bit comes in.
Yeah,
right?
And that's where the private key is stored and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the device becomes an important part of the authentication story. So we will talk a little bit more about this with Rajan a little bit later on.
All right, Windows 10 for enterprises.
So you've been working a bit in this area. So
yeah, exactly. So Windows 10 is definitely showing some love for enterprises recently. So let's actually carry on with the scenario of Windows Hello. So we talked about some of the features that are available on Windows Hello. And what's more important, as we said, is it's not a gimmick. It's actually enterprise-grade security here. So you can see the acceptance rate's pretty impressive. It's 1 in 100,000.
So this means one time in 100,000, it will falsely recognize something
Correct.
That's not the right person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's,
and that is acceptable
yes.
acceptance rate.
Yeah. Exactly. And the nice thing here is, you know, it's got anti-spoofing stuff. So if I, you know, classic example is if I try putting a photo in front of my, you know, camera, it's going to say, well, actually, that's not going to make a difference because it uses the heat map from the infrared
yeah.
sensor. So
you hold a photo up and all it sees is a gray square.
Yes.
And says, no, that's not this
So if
person.
I wear my favorite sort of Andy Wiggly mask on and try to log into your machine, it's going to say, sorry, you're
no,
not Andy.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really kind of impressive. And, you know, you can do all sorts, whether you're showing up a phone screen or, you know, just photos or wearing a mask. It's clever enough to work it out. I think there was even a test done between twins to see if actually one twin could log into another twin's device. And even then it said, actually, no, you're not the right person because the heat maps didn't
yeah.
quite match up. So that's kind of cool.
That's pretty good. And the forced rejection, that's the other side of the coin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Any technology, if it gets it wrong too many times, you're going to hate it. So
Correct.
We've got false rejections at like 2-4%. So that's pretty low failure
yes,
rate.
So that is.
You know, occasionally it will prompt you for your PIN code rather than if it can't quite get the facial.
Correct. Yeah. You're never in a scenario where you know for whatever reason it doesn't let you log in.
Yeah.
It'll always fall back and say, hey, you know, I can recognize your face. Can you type in your PIN code instead?
Yeah.
And then we have the Windows Store for Business. So this is a really cool new feature. It's just great at helping sort of IT pros and organizations to then just sort of provision their machines, making sure that applications are easy to find, easy to manage, and easy to distribute. It's sort of like your one-stop shop. And yet for an end user, it's the same experience that they're used to. You know, it's a nice, simple, easy process for them to follow. And we'll be talking more about that later on today anyway. I think it's the last session, actually.
Yes, that's right.
So I'll be talking more about that.
And you're going to be running through the kind of process for...
Yeah, well, we're going to do the whole process from, you know, like if you're the enterprise person, the admin actually managing those apps and, you know, responsible for distribution. And we're also going to go from the other side where, let's say, you are the actual employer actually using the store client and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, what app should I install on my machine? And the final thing is we'll probably talk a bit about side loading and demonstrate how that's possible as well for maybe some of the offline scenarios or times where, you know, the Windows Store for Business might not suit you.
Cool. Now this, I love this.
This is the real geek out, really. This is also one of my favorite topics. So the Enterprise Sync is just really cool. So I think I've always been used to my Microsoft account always just syncing wherever I go, whichever machine I log into, it keeps my themes, it keeps, you know, my desktop wallpapers, and that sort of stuff. Sometimes I'm a bit OCD and it frustrates me when it's not right. But the great thing here is actually that's coming to enterprise as well. So if you're using it as your Active Directory, it's going to sync those settings too. This is going to be such a great thing because it means now wherever I log in, I just know my machine is tailored around me, just making my productivity just go through the roof, which is really cool.
And of course, the other side of it as well is the data roaming. So yeah. as an app developer, we're used to perhaps writing stuff into the roaming folder and the roaming settings, which is a small amount of data that then gets synced across the user's devices, so that they don't have to enter the same stuff over and over. So
exactly,
it's an important part of getting an app to have a good mobile experience.
Exactly. I mean, as an app developer, it's one of those things where you should try using the roaming profiles a bit more now, because you just know that wherever your user is, they're going to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, because it is part of the enterprise, we have to also talk about things like encryption and security. So it actually does have an enhanced security using the RMS encryption. So, you know, at least your data's safe.
So any data that leaves the device and goes up to the cloud has been encrypted with Azure RMS. So.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the other nice things I like is that there's a separation between sort of my personal data, my consumer data, as well as what's the corporate data as well. So, you know, if for whatever reason I leave the organization or whatever, you know, those sort of things can be easily separated and removed off a device and things like that. So it's kind of cool.
So I guess if a user is installing an app from the store for business, then this roaming will start syncing through Azure Cloud rather than through the public cloud.
Yes.
The publics,
you
know what I mean. The MSA, Microsoft Account Roaming, cool. So that's nice, interesting things around this. So, and actually part of this, of course, is that when you set up a Windows 10 machine, right at the from very first install, you are asked to enroll it either with a Microsoft account,
which is
your public identity, or with a workplace or educational establishment.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is where you're starting. So if you've got an Office 365 or set up, or your machines are joined to a domain, then this is where you're going to get benefit from this kind of thing.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be showing some of that later on. Where we'll show a user actually logging into the store and actually logging in with their workplace account. So that'll be kind of fun.
Cool. Right, that's enough about the platform, if you like. Now, what about us from developers? What have we got that's new in this area? So we've got new stuff. We've got a new SDK that's come along that accompanies this kind of wave of Windows 10. So let's have a look at what's in it. First of all, just think about to say about it. The first release, the first SDK, was the build 10.2.40. And if you had that one installed, you had the Windows SDK for build 10.2.40.
And then now the new one's the 10.586. But the nice thing is they live side by side, right? So in some sense, you don't have to worry about, oh my God, there's a new version, what do I do with my old version? So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's
right. And you can see that at Program Files x86, Windows Kit 10 Platforms, UAP.
Yeah, that old term UAP, that was that was the TLA ways back, and that has persisted in terms of
TLA,
the kind of
three-letter acronym.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
You've been at Microsoft a long time.
Too long. Yes. So the 10.586 alongside. Now we also have, because that's the core platform, the Universal, which to be fair contains. We had a look at the kind of the top apps in the store, and 96% of all the APIs they call are in the Universal.
They all live there, really.
But of course, we've got these extra little add-ons which do specific things for specific hardware families.
It's like IoT is a classic example, right?
Yeah, so you need to get GPIO pins and that sort of thing. So that one is in there. And there's one for mobile, one for team, one for desktop, as you can see. There are revisions of those as well. So there's updates for extension SDKs, and you install the bits, updates, and you'll get all these. And they're all side by side. Now, what this is not a brand new thing. It's an iterative. It's like adding on. It's the next iteration of it. So, and you can kind of get a sense of this when you break open, if you're going to drill down into the platform.xml, which describes which API contracts are in this version of the platform. So 10.586 has got, both versions have got six contracts in them, and a contract is just a independently versioned collection of APIs. And the big one is the Universal API contract, which contains that.
Everything
basically.
Yeah, pretty much everything.
And as you can see from that, that's gone up to version 2.
Mm-hmm.
Also, 3D printing has gone up to version 2. So we've done sufficient updates. So when the major version goes up, then that's kind of a substantial number of changes. But the other four there are still just as they were with 10.2.40. They're still 1.0.0.0. So there's a whole bunch of changes. We're not going to go through all of them.
No, there is a lot.
This slide is intended to give you a headache, but just to pick out a few of these. There are some new methods in Bluetooth. You can now pair devices programmatically, which you, before that you had to rely on the user to go and do it. So that's really good. Print 3D workflow stuff. Windows devices.perception. This is about these new 3D cameras, and it allows you to get the color depth or infrared data of these computer vision cameras. There's some updates to the sensors API set, so some new methods for getting data out of things for like the pedometer and proximity sensor. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. Windows.graphics.holographic. What do you think
that one's about?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of tricky.
So there's that namespace coming in. Obviously, we're going to be talking a bit more about that early next year. So, but the APIs are in there. Windows.perception.spatial. That's another interesting. So this, again, could potentially be something to do with the HoloLens, where you are describing objects positioned in a 3D landscape. So that's some of the perception. And then there's some stuff about cookies, account manager, some API changes around the downloads folder. There's some new methods there for creating user-specific files and folders. Similarly for GNOME folders and storage library. Windows.ui.composition.
That's got some cool stuff.
That has got cool stuff. That's so cool that we've got a whole session coming on it. So Windows.ui.composition is this really high performance graphics layer. It sits between XAML and DirectX and allows you to do really cool animations. But the key thing is it's very, very performant as well. We've got John Cerner and Paul Gildea are going to come along and give you an introduction to that the session after next. There's the Windows UI start screen jump list. I'll talk about that in just a moment. A few minor changes to the maps control. And then there's some, you've got a bit more control over cookie usage if you're working with the HTTP client API set, because this HTTP-based protocol filter is something you can plug into that. And there's a whole bunch of others, but I think you can see from that it's actually not a huge, this isn't a huge release from a feature point of view. And this is why this developer's guide is just an additive to the one we did last time.
It's just pretty much building on top. So we'd still recommend people to go and look at the previous one as well.
All of the stuff we recorded a few months ago is still the story.
It's all valid,
Now what I will do is let's have a look at the a couple of the samples. So first of all, if you haven't discovered this, you want to discover this. Up on github.com, Microsoft Windows Universal Samples, this is where you can find all our standard samples up on GitHub. But there are lots of them. So, you know, there's a great long list of them. So
this is normally my go-to place to go and find anything. If I'm ever stuck and I'm like, oh, how does this work? You know what? There's pretty much a sample for everything
here. That's right, and actually, if you look at the history, you can kind of figure out what they've added, which is kind of what I did in doing this. So let's have a look at a couple of the samples in here. So let's go off to Visual Studio, and we're done with that one. So let's go off and find the jump list. So this is the new. What is a jump list?
Yes. What is a jump list, Andy?
Well, funny you should ask. So a jump list. This is a jump list. So you can. Show jump list is all the things that come up. You know, you can look at the recent things you've been working on. You can see I've been doing a bit of PowerPoint work lately. No change there. And you can also put sort of actions in here as well. And any of these any of these ones. So
and you left click there, right?
There I left clicked, yes. Yep. But you can get the same by right clicking. You get this is the, and you can have the recent list, and you can also have items in there. So this one, let's, I'll just run it first, and then we'll pick out so you can see. Oh, hang on, maybe I won't run it again. Build, rebuild solution.
And how does this vary compared to the context menu that we're used to seeing?
Well, this is because this is about the start screen. And it's about items in there.
So that's the main thing here, right? Yeah. The jump list is all about interaction from the start screen.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the sample coming up. They're all structured the same way. You get different scenarios, and you can obviously examine the code, so you can learn a lot from this. The first one, respond to being launched, is actually when this one scenario is activated when you launch the app by clicking on an item in a jump list. So before you do that, you don't want to, you could remove the jump list, which we haven't got one.
Yeah.
Let's create an item in here. So the display name will be the developer's guide. Developer's guide to was 10, but I'm
and
just...
It's nice because you can even localize it,
and
which is
it's,
great.
Yep, it's all localizable. You can have a tooltip on it, so say hi to Shen. There you go, that's my tooltip. Oh, I could even spell it right, how about that? You can give it a group name if you wish, but if you leave that empty, by default it will go into a tasks group.
Okay.
You can also put an argument, so when somebody clicks on this item, it can be passed into the app. So let's put a dev guide.
So this is an unactivated event that's going to fire in the app that's going to receive
exactly,
this?
Exactly, exactly. And then, is that going to be all right? Maybe you can't do that.
It's because it's one worded. This is just...
Oh, it's using
it's just in, yeah.
We make these samples too clever. There we go. So that's the string I'm going to pass in, an arbitrary string. I can add it to the jump list. Mm-hmm. So let's go and find our app, which go to all apps. Oh, hang on, it was in the list, wasn't it? Jump list, it'll be J there. So we can pin to start.
Yeah.
And there's our thing. And if you right click on this, there's our new task that we've just created. Say hi to Shen. Yeah, that's right.
Say hi to myself.
You can do it from the tile. It also works up here as well from the apps list. And in fact, if it ends up in the...
In the recently added.
No, if it ends up in the most used.
Yeah. Where, there it is.
There it is. There it is. So it's there all the time. You can... Now, I just clicked on it and it's launched into this scenario one. And you see there the page has been activated by the arguments dev guide, which is the string. So
that's
you can
cool.
see how the activation has worked. You can actually prepare some sample files. You can create some sample files and put them in the frequently used list. Let's see if that one works. Right click, there we go.
And it generates
some dummy files and pretends that. So normally your application would just put these into the list based on actual usage.
Okay,
of course.
So your application has to decide what's frequent and what's not. This is not something like, oh, you have this open last.
No, that's right.
Okay.
So the code for this is really simple. So the creating a custom item. Mm-hmm. Here's the scenario items. Create a custom item. There's all sorts of local name, localized stuff. Here's the add to jump list. You just await load jump list dot load current async. Mm-hmm. You create a jump list item with the arguments and the display name, and you can set the other ones on it. We've put a little logo, which is the SDK thing. And then you save async.
Oh, wow. That's not much code.
Really complicated. Yeah, that's right.
A lot of value.
Powerful stuff. And then, like the other one with the most used thing, let's see. Yeah. Like it says here, the comment, this is for the sake of the sample owner. Real app should allow the system list to be populated by user activity. But you just add, this is the storage application permissions dot most recently used list, which is standard. This has been in forever. And is how you add items that the user has used a lot into that. But the key thing here is that we are actually adding it to the jump list. So this is the kind of for add it to the frequently used jump list, system group kind of the frequent. So that's kind of interesting. Let's switch tack and have another look at another one, which is kind of interesting, which is the device enumeration. So this sample did exist for 10.2.40, but it has been updated because we got some interesting new stuff. Now this one allows you to search for devices that are sort of proximal or connected on this sort of thing. You can pick single device. So the first six of these scenarios were in for 10.2.40, but the new stuff is basic device pairing. So, you know, we can actually choose a device selector, Bluetooth, and we can start a watcher, which is looking for devices.
So this is basically doing the discovery process
Yes.
And we've got three devices coming up.
Yeah, so there's a few nearby, obviously. Three devices are coming up, but I've actually got, where's my 1520 gone? There it is. So I'm just going to go into Bluetooth settings on this, which makes this device discoverable. So devices, Bluetooth, and it's got four devices now, but now I'm on this page is on the Bluetooth, it's making it discoverable.
Yeah.
So in a moment, we should, he says, should find, it's still watching for updates, So I'm waiting for this guy to pop onto the list as well. It's worked every time in rehearsal. Come on.
Maybe stop and start the watcher again.
Yeah, could do that. Stop the watcher. Start it again. There it is, on the bottom. So there's my Lumia 1520.
Yeah.
You can see it's is paired is false and can pair is true. So I can now hit the pair selected device button at the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit squash this. Pair selected device. And then we get a dialogue that says pair device, which is supposed to have a yes no button on it.
There we go.
Oh, there we go.
So and this then, has now generated a pin, right, which should match.
Which I'm seeing on the phone here as well.
So I don't
know
if you can maybe, we get the guys in the studio to switch.
So there we go. Obviously, it's up on there, so I can tap yes on there. And I can also click yes on here. But the point of this is, and now it's actually, connection has succeeded, and now we are paired. So this is something you had to get the user to do before, so apps
That's
didn't
really
have any control.
Nice. So you're doing this within the app, which is cool, because you're not having to flip back to the settings and things
exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yeah. And you can unpair it again, unpair it there. And the two options here, the basic device pairing is just using system-provided dialogues for that. If you want to create your own custom dialogues, then this is an example of that
one. Oh, wow.
I'll leave you to look at the code yourselves for that one. So there's a whole lot of new, interesting new stuff if you're working with Bluetooth. And that's just an example. There's a whole bunch of other samples. Of course, you saw the great long list there. All right. So that was a quick look at a couple of samples.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. So we have a quick question from Chris. Do you want to...
Will there be a sample app uploaded to the Windows Store that shows off the UW features? That's a fair idea.
It's not a bad idea, yeah.
No, that's right. I suppose it's kind of our job to provide samples. Along with those, the SDK samples tend to be very specific about some APIs, but in terms of a sort of sample apps that show the whole story, then there's different groups in Microsoft are always producing clients that demonstrate, but it's like... One app that showed off the whole of the UWP is mind-boggling as a concept.
There's going to be a lot there.
Yes.
I think the best thing to do is probably start off with the GitHub repo, have a play, see what you think, and then we'll definitely take the feedback on board and see how easy that is to digest once you built it.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no one way to cook that particular egg, is there? So But I mean, we are always all the time trying to give best examples of best practice.
Well, you'll see from the GitHub repo how much stuff there is in there.
Yeah, and of course there's our samples and developer's guide, but you shouldn't use them as a great example of top class UI design. So much as I'd love it to be the case. Anyway. All right, so we've got these two SDKs, 10.5.86 and 10.2.40.
This is quite a big question, actually.
Yeah. What should I do? So part of the answer to that is thinking, okay, so when will users actually get this version 15.11? So first of all, and this is all part of this Windows as a service idea, that Windows 10 is a continually evolving platform, and we are encouraging users to come along with us and to keep updated. And so for consumer devices, they will get 15.11. In fact, a lot have already got it, basically.
Yes.
It's rolling out as we speak.
It just comes through your
Windows update
process, yeah.
So
it's pretty frictionless.
The idea here is that, hundreds of millions of consumers are all kept up to date on secure on the current branch. So they're getting all the latest updates, keeps them more secure, and obviously, from a developer point of view, moves them on to 10.5.86. At the other end of the spectrum, we've got critical missions, mission critical applications.
Yeah.
And these ones, obviously, we don't want to have imposed change on these. They need to be hardened and deployed, and then and obviously we get security updates will come to these systems. But in terms of there will be no new functionality. This is this long-term servicing branch.
Yes.
And somewhere in the middle we've got business users which will get 15.11, but a little bit behind consumers. So and that's. Businesses have the ability to sort of choose a little bit when these updates get rolled out. Not indefinitely, so they will get it in due course. So there'll be a bit of a delay, but then it will also come to these business users. So for the majority of developers, when you're looking at this kind of area, certainly within a few months, everybody should have 10.5.86 functionality on their machines.
So what should a developer do? Should they just go straight for the 10.5.86 or should they hold back? And what's...
Right, well, First of all, if you don't need any of the new features, you might as well stay on 10.2.40 APIs, because it is all we've done is added a relatively small number of APIs to the existing set. When you create a new project in Visual Studio 2015 with Update 1, which is how you get the bits, unbeknownst to you, it will have set it up like this, with in the project properties.
So this is right-click properties on the project?
Yeah, in here, in the properties, you will find that it has the target version of build 10.5.86 and the min version of build 10.2.40. And both of these are drop-down lists. You can choose, you could make it 10.2.40, 10.2.40, 10.5.86, you know, any combination of these. Well, you can't have min version higher than target version.
Target version, yeah.
But yeah, so it's you've got both of them in there. And obviously, next time we release an SDK update, then there'll be a third one there. So what does all this mean? Well, by default, and there are a few edge cases where you can override this by editing the package manifest. Yep. But in the majority of cases, what happens is that the versions that you have specified in the project properties end up being kind of combined with the package manifest. And when you have done a built version of your app, the built version of app of the package appx manifest is this file called appmanifest.xml. Might be appxmanifest.xml.
Yeah,
so that's a
bit of a
typo
there.
And inside that, you end up with this dependencies. What this is saying is that my app has got a dependency, requires that the target has the Windows is in the Windows.universal device family, which basically means everything.
Yep. And it's got version.
And it's got versioning on it. So it's got a min version of 10.2.40. In this case, it's got a max version tested of 10.5.86. Yep. And this
that's
actually relates to
those two drop boxes.
What does that mean, min version and max version tested? Well, before I answer that, let's just illustrate by demo just a little bit what that means. So I can just go file new project. We'll create ourselves a blank app. And once that is built, then we can double click on the properties, and there you see we've got 10.5.86 and 10.2.40. So I just remind myself of this. So okay, if we set this down to 10.2.40, 10.2.40.
So you get in the thing saying, hey, you know what, are you sure you want to do this? Because obviously you're now restricting to a 10.2.40 build.
Yep,
and
that's
you're
going
to say, yep.
Yeah, if it's 10.2.40, 10.2.40, okay, that's fine. And then obviously this will run great on my local machine is 10.5.86. And clearly having, so any apps you've already created with the older SDK run
it's
just
backwards,
great. Backwards compatible,
well.
Yeah. So that runs, it's breaking
glamorous.
New ground it for is. Stunning UI here. But the point is it runs.
Your apps just keep getting better.
Yeah. And if you could bump it up to 10.5.86, 10.5.86. And now your min version, your max version are the same. And the interesting thing here is if I try to run it on, here's my mobile emulator, 10.0, 10.2.40. If I try and select that one, I click on it, it doesn't take. Visual Studio is clever enough to know that'll never run on there. You can't have that. And the best I'm going to offer you is a device.
And this is sort of replicating even what the store will do in some sense, right?
It is exactly that. Yeah. That's fine. Let's come back to this in a second. So this is determining where your app can run. So we've got target device family, min version 10.2.40, max version 10.5.86. What this means is that this will run on 10.2.40 or higher. And it also means, this isn't limiting it to 10.5.86 either. As you saw before, just as I just showed you, a 10.2.40 app will run on a 10.5.86 system. Likewise, if when we get to version, whatever the next one turns out to be, 10.8.23, I don't know, this an app with this dependency will run on that one as well. But what will happen is it will quirk its behavior to 10.5.86. So, you know, if there are any sort of bug fixes in 10.8.23, this fictional one I've just come up with, you'll still get the 10.5.86 behavior. And of course, if you like this, you can optionally call APIs from the 10.5.86. This version, now if you've got a dependency of 10.5.86, 10.5.86, this can only run on 10.5.86 or higher, and this will not run on 10.2.40. And clearly, you've got open country on everything, any of the new APIs that's in 10.5.86. But here's the clincher of this thing. If your app package spans multiple versions,
Yeah.
And you want to take advantage of some of the newer APIs, you have to gate those calls with API feature detection code.
And we've talked about that in the past, right?
Yeah. This is adaptive code. Yeah. This is, we talked about it more in the context of calling APIs in the extension SDK.
Yeah.
So that's kind of device family adaptive code. This is version adaptive code, but essentially it's the same deal. So you're using the Windows Foundation metadata API information to check if that feature, this new API or property, is present on the system where it's running. And if it is, then you can go ahead and call it. If not, you wouldn't.
So this is all runtime as well, we should stress, right?
Yes, this is a runtime to check, yeah. Now, the question then comes, how do I know which of my code, which code is version sensitive?
Yes. Yeah.
You could pour through the MSDN documentation, but I really don't recommend that. You could just try and run it on an older system, see what breaks.
Just that's keep another your fingers way of crossed doing it. And see
yeah.
what happens.
Yeah. The nicer way of doing it is to use this amazing tool that's being created by Lucien Vichik and the Visual Studio team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which does it at the IntelliSense stage. So
yes.
It will actually warn you and give you potential fixes.
Which is great, because this just removes a lot of the headache.
It does.
It makes things so easy.
Yep. So let's have a look at a... recent project. Okay, so this one, not interested in that one, wasn't very exciting app. This app has got two views in it, and I'll come back to this in the next session actually. You've got mainpage.xaml and mainpage.onehanded. But the important thing is it's calling an API that's in 10.5.86, which is to get the diagonal size in inches of your display. The properties on here at the moment is...
It's just the normal standard default, right?
And if you put 10.240 on it, you will helpfully get...
Oh, there you go.
A red squiggle saying, no, I don't know anything about this one.
Not liking that, yeah.
No. So, yeah, you could do that. Let's change that back to 10.586.
But obviously as frameworks build upon, over time, you can't just keep flicking between them and trying, you'll be there forever.
And if I was to run this now on a 10.240 device, such as this mobile emulator, it's going to try and call that API. And what will happen is something nasty will happen, which will get, well, it happens to be an invalid cast exception, which is kind of a weird exception. But
it is,
I
isn't
thought
it?
It'd be more of a something not found or something. Well, it's not calling a method, it's a property. So anyway.
Yep.
That's, you can see that obviously this is not working. So what we can do is go off into NuGet, go off to the online and find our platform specific package. There's the analyzer.
There we
it's
go.
Got, already got 2,100 installs. That's how useful it is. We're going to install that in. Under the analyzers, you'll see that we've got now got this these rules, got platform specific, and you can change the rule set severity. Default just means it treats it as a warning, I believe. You can change it to whole error if you like. But the key thing here is once you have installed this, you'll see that helpfully you get a green squiggle, which is get for current view, which is coming from that analyzer, saying that this is version specific code. So this needs to be gated, so we can. It even gives you the code you need to do, so it adds it in.
It's just done all the hard work for you, really.
Yeah,
at this
that's
point.
Right. Yeah.
And there you go.
I need to just fix up a little bit. So this is actually a nullable double DSI. We'll initialize that to null. And now this will execute on the 10.5.86 and we'll get the nice one-handed view. We'll look a little bit more about this in the next session.
Mm-hmm.
If it's on a 10.240, you'll get the default view, so you won't get the one-hand optimized one because that bit of code won't execute.
Because you won't have found it.
No,
because it's
right.
An nullable type, it wouldn't have called it.
So there we've got, this is the non-optimized view, so but it's still running. It's still running,
yeah.
So it shows how that kind of works out for you. Okay. So, what's in the tools?
Oh, well, it's quite a bit. So I don't know if you saw the recent events that went on.
The Connect ones,
it was amazing. So one thing we announced, that XAML behaviors are now in NuGet, and you're able to go and add your own coolness to it. So it's kind of cool, because you can now go to the GitHub repository, have a look at the code, maybe fork it, add some more, and then push them back. It's kind of nice. So it's just making things a bit more flexible. And, you know, the thing is, we know loads of people develop a lot of behaviors, and it's just nice to try and bring them all together into one. So you'll see, especially like if we go into Blend's a classic example, where now if you click on the behaviors in the assets tab.
Yeah, it invites you to download the NuGet package.
Please grab the latest NuGet package instead. Yeah. So this is nice, because it just means you get a new evolution over the behaviors too. So, you know, everyone go and have a play and see what you think.
Yeah. So the community can contribute. A lot of people love behaviors. It's a way of getting rid of those annoying little...
behaviors, I'm a bit of a fan, really. It just makes things easier, especially when you're reusing similar sort of functionality.
And
disable project code. So actually, this is a kind of interesting feature here. So we generally find that, you know, some people actually just like to hand crank the XAML, and, you know, but they still want part of the designer to show. But obviously, the designer sometimes executes the code in the background to try and make sure you get the fully featured experience, but that's not what everyone wants sometimes. So we've introduced a button there that disables a project code, which is pretty handy. You get all the performance and all the speed that you'd want if you're someone that likes to hand crank the XAML very quickly. But at the same time, you know, if you want to actually see what happens when you render, you can then enable it again, and you'll be able to see all the code that gets executed.
Yeah.
There's an interesting article there actually that we've linked to, which actually helps you determine sometimes when you will see, you know, you've got like a stack trace saying, hey, designer can't do something. In general, it's because it's probably not designer friendly. So it shows you a great way to use the debugger and attach to it, and then try and figure out, hey, actually, you know what it is? It's because my designer is trying to call this piece of code, and I haven't initialized it, and therefore I would potentially get an error.
And having design time data is a real benefit to people working on
it. It's such a necessity now. Yeah, like, we should try and do more of it, because it
just
makes life.
But most people don't know how to debug it when it goes wrong. So
this is a good
article on that. Yeah.
Oh, this has been one of my favorite releases on
a big ask. This has been a big ask.
I face this problem all the time. So it's always the simple thing where I'm on an interface, and what I actually want to just say, hey, you know what? Who's implemented this interface? Or it's an abstract class or whatever it is, and I'm going through, you know, doing the usual F12, and you get to the point where you get to an interface, and you're just like, great, you know, I'm at the point now where I'm now going back to using the usual, you know, find, and it's not as sweet and as nice as this. The nice thing about this is I can just go to implementation on an interface or an abstract class, and it's going to say, hey, this is where it's being implemented, and, you know, it just makes searching and navigating so much faster.
Yep.
So it would be really a productive thing for me.
And this one gets very exciting.
So the interactive window is back for C#. So I found myself using this more and more now, actually. So the great thing here is I can actually just basically script through my C# in the C# interactive and actually get results back. So you can see here we've got a very simple thing where we're going using the GitHub client and just getting the number of folks that
love you can reference DLLs, you can put using statements in. And
it's
you can
pretty
just,
much a rank C#,
you can just
right?
try out calling DLLs and calling methods and figure out how an API works.
Yeah, it's like the next... You know, it's the next big step from the immediate window in some sense. And, you know, it uses the repo command line, which is cool.
And it's good video, along with lots of all this stuff on the Connect event up on Channel 9. You can watch
these videos. Exactly. And I'd highly recommend people go and have a look at this, because I can imagine their productivity is just going to go through the roof with this. All right, so .NET Native Shared Assembly. So this isn't new in particular. So it's been around for a little bit, right?
Well, yeah, so we had an intermediate tools release. There was a 1.1 that sort of went out, months back, six weeks back.
Yes. Well, you know.
Yeah, this is so fast
We're
these days.
We're a fast-moving organism.
Well, we are now. This is cool.
Yeah. So this is quite a neat feature, because essentially it takes the .NET native shared components and says, hey, well, you know what? You don't need to basically have this as part of your package every time. It just doesn't make sense, right?
Because it's common to a large number of apps in general. So,
exactly.
So this will get deployed, the shared bit will get deployed on the first time you reference an app,
correct.
You download an app.
And then everyone else just references to it. So it just makes your packages lighter, and, you know, it's less of a burden from, you know, users downloading your app from the store, because everything's just smaller and reduced.
It's cool.
So there is obviously a few things you need to do with your CS proj.
This is a manual edit at the moment.
It is at the moment.
We are thinking of, you know, in time, possibly making this the default, but for now it's an opt-in. So.
Yeah.
But you can deploy apps to the store that are using this, so it's live. Right, now, finally, how do you get all this stuff? Well, Yeah, we've got all the...
It's the usual flavours that we're used to.
Yeah, all the same. But the thing is, if you download these now, you'll have update one is integrated. And update one brings you the 10.586 SDK and the updated emulators and everything else. Alternatively, and if you've already got an installation with 10.240, you can simply go to Tools, Extension and Updates, and it you should find it on there. Yeah. It'll be offered to you. Or you can download, go to that link and start the upgrade process. Now, this is cool.
Yeah, so I was blown away when I saw this. So, you know what, I speak to so many people and saying, hey, you know what, we want to try out UWP, but you know what, we've got to set up our virtual machines, we've got to install Visual Studio, we've got to get all the extension
SDKs.
It's
a lot of work, I'll do it one day.
Yeah, exactly, and now we're offering sort of a 60-day evaluation where you can just download the, you know, in this case, if you're a VMware fan or a Hyper-V fan, VirtualBox, Parallels, whatever it is, you can basically just go and download that
VM,
particular
and
VM.
And you've got 60 days, it's got all of the tools,
it's got your Visual Studio on it, it's got your IoT core IoT updates, core. Your Azure SDKs, if you want the iOS Bridge, and the UW sample. So it's pretty much good to go.
You literally
just have to boot it up and have a play.
And just a final reminder of our home on the web, dev.windows.com, where you can learn about all of this stuff and get samples, like with the question about samples earlier and examples and the forums on there as
it's
well.
It's the place where you'd go to submit your application to.
And it is indeed the place where you go to submit your application. Great, cool. All right, so that's up. We are done with that. Was the kind of introductory session. We're going to take a very short break, just time to change over, and then Liz Threlkeld is going to join me, and we're going to look deeper into building apps for Continuum.
Fantastic.
After that, we got a great session on composition layer for really fluid animations. Then we've got a look at Hello and Passport. Rajan's joining me for that, and then you're going to join me again at the end and we'll talk about the
Windows Store for Business.
Store for Business. Great. So I hope that was entertaining and informative, and I hope to see you in a few minutes' time. Thanks.
All right. Cheers, folks.